First of all, big pleasure to be here and to be able to give this presentation to you. And let me start by thanking the organizers and, of course, mainly Professor Katrien de Vos for inviting me to give this presentation on a topic which is possibly one of the biggest challenges we're facing: fighting hunger. Imagine one of eight people in the world currently suffering from malnutrition. It's horrific to think about it. Not enough food, not good enough food, vulnerable to diseases, diarrhea, children being the ones most vulnerable for this, and knowing that that will become worse in the coming years, as I'll point out in a moment. That's a big moral issue, and I hope with me we feel the urge to do something about it. It's not only a moral issue. If we think about the changes that we can be expecting over the coming years, it will also become a social issue when people will start to migrate, and mass migration will cause another dimension of the problem that will affect us even more, as it does right now. So I'm glad that I'm given the opportunity to put the other four presentations in this symposium into that wider perspective, not bringing that much new probably, but making clear how it fits into the scheme of things in our attempt. Since we need to do something, we need, as individuals, to make the right choices if it comes to buying products, to perhaps even specially voting at a certain stage, since politicians are, of course, having a major influence of what is going to happen in the coming years. But as a scientist, we also need to make the right decisions. And I hope that I'll be able to indicate a little what, as scientists, we can do in this larger perspective. I have a background in the Generation Challenge program, where I was in charge of the bioinformatics, as Katrien noticed. Generation Challenge program I'll be describing in a moment in some more detail, trying, it's one of the modest initiatives to try to bridge the gap between the technology in the north and the demands in the south for that technology, which is one of the biggest challenges we're facing if we want to apply our technology to the problems in the developing countries. If we look at the role of bioinformatics, what is the topic of this presentation before I go to the first slide? It is clear that if we think of the new green revolution and fighting hunger, there's much, much more to do than just biotech. There is a lot of other elements, starting with education and infrastructure. I'll be touching on that in a moment as well. At a certain stage, we'll need biotech to improve our crops, biotech plant breeding, and there bioinformatics plays an important role. That role is rather fundamental. It's like asking what role mathematics had to bringing us to the moon. Without mathematics, that would not be possible. Without bioinformatics, biotech is not possible, as you all know. So basically, that will be the role of bioinformatics. Not much more to say about it. In this presentation, therefore, I'll try to sketch that context by describing the perfect storm, that's a quote, and the role of biotech in the Green Revolution, then move to the Generation Challenge program, then try to summarize the role of bioinformatics and make some concluding remarks. So let's go. the context. I use a quote of Professor John Beddington, who is the chief scientific advisor to the UK government, still from an interview we gave to The Guardian in March last year, where he described in a very clear terms the perfect storm, as he called it, that is facing us over the coming few decades. In 2030, the population will reach 8.3 million with an increased demand of food and energy of 50% and fresh water by 30%. It's quite clear that Malthusian situations will arise. Climate change will further exacerbate this situation, and we are aware that changes will happen. Possibly we don't know why they're caused or what exactly will happen, but things will happen and we have to be prepared. And to quote Professor Beddington, there's not going to be a complete collapse, but things will start getting really worrying if we don't tackle these problems. That's probably English understatement. If we look at the world population, we're now at 6.8, I think, billion people. That will increase. Looking at it on a longer time scale, it looks even worse, and this figure was picked up by some cartoonists who indicate the gravity of the situation. I really hope I can. That is the situation. We have a responsibility there. Climate change, as I said, IPCC issues, things are changing. We don't know where we're heading, but it will have impact. And I'm currently working in genetic resources conservation, and we see a clear thing there. On one side, increased need for genetic diversity, since it will be clear that those farmers will need to grow crops that might be different crops than they grow right now. Those crops will have to be adapted to their environments, or if they grow the crops they're currently growing, will have to need new requirements of those crops. So the need for genetic resources will be bigger as ever. That's the other side of the coin, due to the changes of the environment, which might go quicker than the plant populations might cope with. A lot of genetic diversity will disappear if we don't act properly. So I'm repeating that quote. Things will start to get really worrying if we don't tackle these problems. So we have to go towards a solution. There are some positive things. Population growth is slowing down. It's estimated that a plateau should be reached by 2050. I'm not sure whether that will be true. I don't know whether that takes into account disasters that we can expect if things continue the way they are. Another positive thing is that in the current situation we produce sufficient food, but a lot of that food is lost, doesn't reach the proper people. Many of us eat too much of it and leaving too little for the rest. So it's, to a large extent, making gains in productivity by improving the use of the existing technology and practices. Building roads would solve already a big part of the problem. Many programs are investing in that on a large scale. And that's doable. That doesn't require high tech. All along the way, we have to keep an eye on sustainability of that thing, of course, if we identify. We have to generate greater yields using less water, fertilizer, and pesticides. Again, plant breeding, biotech will play a major role in that. To indicate that that biotech is not the only element of the solution, I here show a table produced by IFPRI, the International Food Policy Research Institute, indicating that agriculture is only the first priority in Uganda, but things like irrigation, education, roads, telecommunication, electricity, health, and so forth are also major, major elements. So our role is a modest one, and we should be aware of that. But it's an important one. All roles are important. To make that possible, we need funds. And now, currently, only 5% of R&D investments in the world is on agriculture. Some countries had the wisdom to invest a bit more. China is a good example of that. That doubled its investment over the last decade and is still increasing its investment in agriculture. China will be a major player there. Looking at the Green Revolution, look at that picture. Yields going up, productivity going up, but we'll have to curve that curve even further upwards to meet demands. Biotech will play a major role in that. Genetic modification, marker-assisted breeding. Genetic modification, major problem there are the IP issues. And we've seen it in the golden rice example that I'll show in a moment as well. Biotech, and most of you know that better than I do, is covered with IP issues, and there are some initiatives like PIPRA, I think an American-based initiative, public IP resource for agriculture, looking at ways of, first of all, creating transparency in all that jungle of IP things, licenses for technologies, and secondly, trying to negotiate humanitarian licenses so that the licenses are available for developing countries. BIOS is another example, an acronym standing for Biological Innovation for Open Source, an initiative where technology is developed in the open source, in public domain, that can do the same things as the technology that is currently used under the protection of all kinds of licenses. There are things happening there. Another element is that we will need to change the opposition against genetically modified crops, an opposition that is largely based on nothing, on perception, on strange PR. But on the other side, I mean, do we want to give the food production to those six companies that own the patents and that are hugely investing at the moment of getting more of it, monopolizing the food production, basically? I don't think so. So that opposition needs to be curved, but with the proper arguments. But we'll need genetically modified crops. We need to introduce those traits that we need to increase abiotic stresses, disease resistances, quality, and so forth. In all this, identification of the useful genes and alleles plays a major role. We need to know what traits to inbreed or integrate or to use in the modification. And there, of course, bioinformatics is a major element. I'll get to that in a moment as well. I think I need a little glass of water. Turned out to be a plastic cup of water. Identification of major genes and alleles. Source germplasm collections. The role of those cannot be underestimated. As I indicated, I earn my living now with plant genetic resources, so I'm slightly biased. How do we identify those traits? Well, phenotyping, very important. We need to observe them. But obviously that's not always easy, since most of the traits will be hidden in an exotic or in wild background. We can see that major traits that we're using at the moment in breeding from exotics and wild are very qualitative traits, disease resistance and so forth, easy to observe, spread the disease, the plant that survives is resistant. But if it comes to abiotic stresses, are quality trades, yields, and so forth, we need to be more clever. So we need to create populations that allow us to search more efficiently. Simply by optimizing diversity in core collections or by recombining promising lines in populations like MAGIC, an acronym that is multi-parent advanced generation intercrosses, following those with our markers and identify the QTLs. There is that classical QTL analysis, crossing two lines, observing the phenotypes, see what association between markers and phenotypes are there, and picking them up. You all know about it. And the association genetics using as high density maps as we can have. Lots of developments there, very promising. Once we have a candidate gene, we need to validate it. We need to put it in another background and observe whether it actually does what we hope it does in that background, so whether it's truly the gene we're looking for. Another approach is allele mining. If we do have the sequence already, we can screen germplasm to look for allelic variants. Ecotilling is the term, as you probably know. Tilling is targeted induced lesions in genomics. Very ugly acronym. Ecotilling is where you use natural diversity, basically, to do exactly that. So then we have the traits. Putting them into the backgrounds that they need to be, and there I would like to stress that the local adaptation of that germplasm that the farmers are currently growing is, of course, the utmost importance. We can't deliver them with the crops that grow well here. So putting them in there, we've got a couple of examples, recent examples, golden rice probably not being the most recent, mainly from GM crops, or all of them, I guess. Golden rice, where we put two genes, one of maize and one from Arrhenia, bacteria, I think, causing a lot of plant diseases, that accumulate beta-carotene in the endosperm of rice. Golden rice one took, well, how long ago was it developed? More than a decade ago, but didn't, due to that jungle of licenses that I told about and the GM opposition, didn't really meet its objectives. Recent publication of PNAS about high protein-rich potato is a good example, I think, where Amaranthus gene increased nutritive value the protein content by up to 60%. Rema is another one that also illustrates quite well the possibilities, but also the problems. It's a water-efficient maize for Africa, public-private partnership with Monsanto. In the environment where I come from, hares are raising once the name is mentioned, because they want to push technology and they want to take over the world food production. Well, here they made genes available on humanitarian licenses to increase the water use efficiency of maize in Africa. This was bred into CIMMYT material, and that all was negotiated and organized by the AAFTF, that's an African Agricultural Technology Foundation. Very promising, now field testing, but on the other side, also lots of public awareness issues around it. Is it technology push? I don't care, as long as we make sure that in the end, that takeover of the market is not complete. It will be made available to African farmers without any licenses. Then I included the cisgenetic variety of potato that's going on, or a number of varieties, the DERF potatoes, which has a sustainable resistance against Phytophthora, big problem all over the world. There, cis GMO was created, meaning that a gene from a species, and in this case, that fell off the slide, a number of wild potato species were used as a source, but the integration into cultivated potato is very difficult, so they used transgenics to do exactly that. And a fight is going on at the moment whether that falls under all the GMO regulations or not. So let's move to the Generation Challenge program. I'll speed up a little bit. Norman Borlaug was already mentioned. He gave the name to this program, and we owe him a lot. Died last year. I challenge the next generation to use new scientific tools and techniques to address the problems that plague the world's poor. A quote. And from that, we took the generation and the challenge. It is a program that wants to use genetic diversity and advanced plant science to improve crops for greater food security in the developing world. And as I indicated before, it tries to bridge that gap between the technology in the north and the problems in the south. It's a 10-year CGIAR challenge program, and I hope all of you know what CGIAR is, but it is that big consortium of agricultural research institutes in the south that were doing the Green Revolution, the first one. The GCP, Generation Challenge Program, was a 10-year program, is a 10-year program, two phases of 5 years. We're in the second phase at the moment, hosted at CIMMYT in Mexico. CIMMYT is that maize and wheat breeding institute that you all know, with a budget of about $15 million per year. That's peanuts for the big companies, but I think for a program like that, that's a considerable amount of money. So, we have the crop diversity, we have the biotechnology, and then a miracle happens. We tried to do that miracle. There's another arrow that should have been included, and that is making sure that it reached the farmers in the south. Okay, how is the Generation Challenge Program organized? Research structure. We have a sub-program working on germplasm, characterizing the stuff, genotyping the stuff, finding out what was where, but also creating genomic resources. We had a program on gene discovery using comparative genomics and other advanced science to identify candidate genes. We had a program on marker-assisted selection and breeding to do the actual breeding, develop methodologies for that, but also setting up networks to do this, and all that was covered by SP4, the program that I used to lead on databasing and information networks and methodology development and so forth. As you can see, it's everywhere. Bioinformatics is everywhere. On the bottom, according to some that should have been on the top, there's the capacity building and training activities of the fifth sub-program. And this was the structure of our work. Worked pretty well, first phase. And all that products flow out of that via breeding programs into improved germplasm in farmers' fields. Perhaps the most important value of GCP thus far is the opportunities it has provided for people of diverse backgrounds to think collectively about solutions to complex problems and in the process to learn from another. This is from an external program review, and I couldn't agree more. Who are those actors? They are advanced research institutes, between quotes, CGIAR institutes, and national agricultural research stations all over the world. And in 2009, we had over 200 partners in 63 countries. That's huge. Here's a picture of the consortium members and the projects. The red dots are the places where research was done, and the white dots are the consortium members to give you an impression of the coverage of the world. This was quite an achievement, I think, to get all those people thinking together and collaborating to work on our mission. I didn't know of any other program that was successful in drawing together so many actors. Whether they acted in the right way is another matter, but we had the actors together. As I mentioned, two phases. One, in the development of the first phase, concentrating on development of infrastructure. Utilize plant genetic diversity for crop improvement on one side, so that means develop low-cost technology for germplasm genotyping, allele mining and molecular breeding. Secondly, integrate genomics with plant physiology and biology. Thirdly, identify useful diversity traits, genes, and alleles. Once we had that, the challenge was to bring that to the farmers or to the National Agriculture Research Stations in the developing countries. And for that, we had that capacity building and the delivery of products to enable end users to adopt the products. And end users in this regard are the National Agriculture Research Stations in those developing countries, which is not everywhere that well developed, but in a number of countries it's very well developed and they could be used. And to support the process using the projects, and that's integrated breeding platform. I'll get to that in a moment, but the principle is that the National Agriculture Research Stations are facilitated to do the marker-assisted breeding themselves. We deliver the genes. They deliver the proper genetic background and the knowledge of the breeding. We supply with the facilities for the genotyping, for example. In this phase, the bioinformatics did that blanket role, enabling all the activities. And I've got a list of products that came out of there, platforms for collaboration, simply communicated in wiki, websites, and so forth. Software platform, making sure that the software being developed at different places could communicate with each other, use the same architecture as far as that was possible. Crop ontologies, so that we could communicate about traits in a proper way. By the way, we didn't do all that. We, of course, very often hijacked on ongoing initiatives. We didn't invent the wheels anew. On the contrary, I would say. Create an HPC network so that the CPU-intensive calculations could be done. Create an infrastructure for data exchange involving web services. Not the biggest success, I would say, but lots of investments were made there. Create database for comparative genomics, make an expression analysis pipeline, develop methodologies on QTL time E, reanalyzing existing data sets. That was very exciting because lots of data sets are lying around, but with proper reevaluation, much new results could be gotten out. Created support for LIMS to make sure that what happened in the labs was administrated properly, and created a lot of capacity building material that could be used also in the South to be able to join in the discussions. Okay, that was phase one. From phase one we went to phase two. To be able to do that, phase two was much more towards the application, towards actual reading. We had a targeting approach with a GIS analysis with the crop areas we wanted to cover, stunted children, and that's a very cynical way of measuring poverty and the risk of hunger. Irrigated areas, drought, since I should say that drought was our main focus, since it appeared that much of the hunger in the world is caused, apart from political unrest, I should say, by drought, crop loss, hunger, and farming systems. And this resulted in a number of selected seven, in this case, what was called challenge initiatives. And I won't go through it by reading. You can see it here. But it is basically a crop in a region. Those challenge initiatives selected National Agricultural Research Services or others that were able to adopt that technology, and we made sure that, are making sure that drought tolerance and rice in Africa is improved, etc., etc. That's going on at the moment. Parallel to that, the molecular breeding in the National Agricultural Research Services, that's at NARS, is supported by integrated breeding platform, although I think the name changed recently again. Having a portal and help desk, providing the information on methodologies and feedback on that. Second component, information system, supporting the data management, providing the tools for the analysis, and creating information network and workflows. And thirdly, services, very important. Genotyping support service, given the possibility to a NARS to say, hey, I've got this stuff here, I would like to do this molecular breeding, I can't do the genotyping, they send the material, we make sure to get the data back so that they can select the material they need, since in those countries it's very difficult often to do the genotyping themselves. Other elements are the breeding plan development service, information management service, and intellectual property and policy services. All these things should allow NARS to use the technologies that we're using in our breeding day to day. The themes for bioinformatics here were user support to ensure that all GCP scientists, that was internally, have access to the advice and tools to facilitate the data management, analysis, and publication. Secondly, data curation and quality. All that generated data had to be curated, and the quality had to be assured. In phase one, that appeared to be a big problem, data quality, that was neglected initially and caused a lot of delay in research. Thirdly, methodology development. Of course, new methodology is always welcome. That involves quite a range of elements, but I already mentioned that QTL times E, association genetics, and so forth, and an informatics infrastructure development. To give a picture of that, if this is the usual breeding cycle, the classical breeding cycle, and here we have the molecular elements added to it, haplotyping at the beginning to know what germplasm we have, and genotyping of the breeding material to know what lines to select. We've got here some information components on the field data management and the management of the phenotyping, pedigree for the selection of the material to go into the breeding programs, and limbs, of course, and all that, and this thing should be much bigger. There's a network and a workflow system supporting all that. 10-year program, second phase is on, supposed to end in 2013. There is a sunset strategy, it's being called, aimed at creating sustainable database for a base for its products, and that's databases and portals. Here, that sunset strategy is very much influenced by the ongoing, what's called change management in the CGIAR. CGIAR is being restructured completely at the moment, and it's not that clear what will happen to the products of the GCP once it ends. Let's hope that that will be resolved properly. So, that was the GCP. And I hope I gave that picture that it's everywhere. I gave that comparison to mathematics and the moon landing, right? So, what can we do? First of all, I believe that apart from the public-private partnerships that are a way of getting the genes from the companies to the poor farmers, we should aim at making data, knowledge, methodology, software, all of that publicly available. Open source, other copyleft agreements, licenses are available. You probably all know the GNU public license and all the derivations of that. And having it accessible is not the only thing, it also needs to be available. The ones who need it should be able to get access to it via proper information, websites, help desks, etc. That's one thing. Make sure that your products are publicly available. Second thing, make sure that the proper products are available. And there, I repeat that slide that I showed earlier. I won't go through it. This is important. This is important for tropical agriculture to improve. GCP learned that the communication between the scientists is of utmost importance. Communities of practices and so forth can be formed, and you can be part of that. We need tools and methods, standardized database management tools to allow the data sharing, analysis, and curation, but also clever allele mining strategies. I think we can improve a lot there. Candidate gene identification strategies, role for bioinformatics. The data, we need high quality data, passport data, phenotypic data, genotypic data, high density genetic maps to allow for marker-assisted breeding. And this is my conclusion slide. There is a problem. There is a problem to fight hunger. We can't deny it, and it's a complex problem. Green Revolution 2 will play a modest but important role in solving it. The problem is bigger, also involves health, education, roads, etc., etc. That point was made. The bioinformatics forms perhaps the backbone of the Green Revolution. Similarly to how IT is the backbone of any development in the society at the moment. Finally, bioinformaticians, and that's you, many of you, can contribute to fighting hunger by making the outputs freely available and to collaborate with ongoing initiatives in the CGIAR and elsewhere. I would like to thank collaborators in the GCP, management team, all the PIs, all scientists, and all the members of the institutional members in the consortium, and of course the funding organizations, which by the way are mainly EU, World Bank, DFID, that type of organizations. Gates Foundation since a number of years. And finally, I would like to thank you for your attention.
Questions for Theo? So I have a question for you. So how do you actually measure, this has been going on for, 7 years now, so how do you measure the impact of the program?
That's a good question, and in the end, I guess that will be measured in terms of varieties grown in farmers' fields. I mean, that's the impact we want to have. As far as I know, we're not using at the moment clear indicators for impact, so they're all proxies, and the ones we're using you can figure out. I mean, it's number of scientists involved, that type of things. But the true proof of the pudding will be in the number of varieties on farmers' fields.